Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Game World Cup podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. We are down to the last four in France. Is it coming home? Could England be crowned world champions of football for the first time since 1966? The Lionesses have been here before and here to discuss whether they can make it to their first ever final. In the studio with me, the Tottenham goalkeeper Chloe Morgan. Down the line from Lyon, women's football reporter for The Times, Molly Hudson. And from The Times and The Sunday Times, it's Rebecca Myers. Later on, we'll be looking ahead to the second semi-final between the Netherlands and Sweden. But we start, of course, with the meeting of England and the holders USA on Tuesday. Rebecca, you wrote in the Sunday Times about Phil Neville and how much he's fallen in love with the women's game since his appointment 18 months ago. It is a landmark day for the Lionesses and indeed then for Neville himself.
It really is. And I've had incredible feedback to that piece from sort of just members of the public expressing how much they love Phil Neville, which is probably not what I thought I would get, you know, first thing on a Sunday morning. But every single reply to that, every single comment or tweet I've had has been people expressing their admiration for his passion, which I think you can really see. That said, the pressure is on. He said himself at the weekend, again, in Sunday's paper, he said he would consider a semi-final loss a failure. That's a huge thing to say. Ostensibly, it's a success. He's reached where they reached 4 years ago. He's, you know, in a much harder field than ever before. So technically, it is a success, but he clearly will not see it as one unless they go through, which, is a lot of pressure to put on himself.
And Rebecca, England have picked up a surprising fan, haven't they, in Serena Williams?
They have. So we know, we were talking before I know about her, they ended up in the same hotel as her about a week ago now, and she was training out in France and they ended up staying in her hotel. Apparently Rachel Daly and Millie Bright were just a couple of doors down in the hotel rooms, which made me laugh. But she was talking at the weekend and she said she'd kind of joined in a little bit with some of their workouts or like watched them working out and said she liked to call them workout buddies now, but she'd been watching them and she said that she couldn't believe like how fit they were. At one point she said, I was looking at them thinking, I couldn't do this. And I mean, if they're training harder than Serena Williams, I'm just going to say, I think it's coming home. I got quite carried away when I saw that.
Yeah, and don't blame that optimism. Yeah, Serena Williams, the ultimate athlete, saying that. It's incredible. This is the third major tournament in a row in which England have reached the semi-finals. Molly, is this match the culmination of several years of progress then?
I think it is, certainly. I know Phil sort of said yesterday, you know, this is what it means, these 18 months that he's been in charge. It literally does all come down to this game, which seems crazy because, you know, they won the Jubilee Cup, they've played all these games, but actually when it comes down to it, it's the World Cup games and it's the semi-finals and these are what the players live for and this is what Phil Neville lives for. This is why he took the job. And, you know, as Rebecca said in our article, you know, he's fallen in love with the women's game. He loves women's sport, but, you know, I'm sure he'll probably hate women's football and women's sport if we go in on leave tomorrow, because for him, he has to win. You know, he talks about failure and success and the line is so thin at this level. And for him, he has to win. And it you know, we've been here a long time now and it feels as though there is more riding on this than just winning or losing. As much as winning is so important for the Lionesses, it's so important for the sport as a whole and the sport back home.
On paper, England have one of the best defensive records in this tournament. They've conceded a single goal, and that was in their opening match against Scotland. But, Chloe, do we think they've actually been defensively solid?
I think there's definitely been points where it's not looked too strong, admittedly. I think they've definitely honed in on that 100%. I think even looking at the recent Norway game, I mean, it was, you know, there were very few chances there for Norway. I think the attack section of the game was absolutely fantastic, with Jill Scott, Ellen White, Lucy Bronze looking to be such a threat throughout the entire game. So I think them taking the pressure off the defence and the midfield then coming in and also relieving the pressure has meant that really the back line hasn't had to do too much work. I think going forward into the next game, I think that's obviously going to be a bit of a different story. I think there is going to be moments where they're going to be under attack a lot. There's going to be a good sense of pressure. But I think Neville's quite good with his strategy sometimes, in that he'll bring on forwards like Nikita Paris, kind of relieve that pressure again and try and sort of get more of an attack up front. So I think so far we've been tested, but I think the USA are definitely going to put us through our paces.
Rebecca, let me just ask you then about the back four. The left-back situation, obviously Demi Stokes, Alex Greenwood. Do you have any idea who Phil Neville might choose?
To be totally honest, no. And also at the press conference last night, somebody was talking about the pairing of Megan Rapinoe and Lucy Bronze, and Phil said, well, how do you know I'm not going to play Rachel Daly? Like, he was in a really sort of slightly trolling us, but we still don't entirely know. I would suggest, given how everything kind of held up against Norway, he will keep the same back line, I think. And I think Demi was very, very good against Norway. Millie had a sort of shaky point against Norway, but from what we understand, she'd had this virus, and I think it was just kind of pure physical exhaustion at that point. But I think she worked so well. She cleared so many great balls and was so brilliant with Steph that I suspect he will be, at this point, he'll be trusting in that back line to deliver really and keeping with people that he knows.
And Chloe, we barely talked about the goalkeeper, Karen Bardsley, in this tournament. We expect that she will be tested on Tuesday.
Yes, I would definitely say she's going to have a work cut out for her. I think she's been really solid. I think communication, positioning has been absolutely fantastic. I think there are games where she's had long periods where there's not been too much to do because of the fantastic work of the defence. But I think she's been very solid. I think that, you know, the defence are going to have a lot of faith in what she can do. But I definitely think the USA are going to put in a fair few shots. And I have my full faith that she'll go out there and do her absolute best. She's an experienced keeper. She's played in these kind of tournaments before. She's a well-renowned keeper, internationally. So she's used to the pressure. And I think she'll definitely step up and be a solid part of the back line going into tomorrow's game.
Phil Neville has said we will see Nikita Paris on penalties should England be awarded any. She did score against Scotland, but then missed successive spot kicks against Argentina and Norway. Chloe, as a goalkeeper, you'd surely want to be up against someone you know has recently missed a few penalties.
I think you'd definitely have it in the back of your minds that they'd probably be a little bit more nervous than they usually would. But Nikita Paris is one of those players, and I think Phil Neville will definitely have confidence in her to go out and take a penalty again if needs be. I think sometimes the worst thing you can do is take away that responsibility from a player who's maybe missed a penalty, so they carry that with them, and then it sort of manifests and gets bigger as a thing they can't do anymore. But I think if there's a penalty situation, I'd have full faith that Nikita Paris will be able to go out there and slot one past. But I think, from like you say, from a keeper's perspective, you probably would want a slightly shakier or less confident player to be taking a penalty. But with Nikita Paris, I think she's got a lot about her. She'll bounce back from those misses, and I think she'll be more determined than anything, actually, probably to make sure that she doesn't miss again.
Not that I want to help the US, but as a goalkeeper, can you psych out a player when you know they have that sort of frailty, perhaps because they know that they've missed penalties recently?
I think there's certain things that you could probably do. I think a lot of goalkeepers are now tending to move from one side of the line to the other, sort of big hand movements, big gestures, maybe sort of looking them quite directly in the eye, maybe even smiling or things like that. So there are techniques, tactics that the goalkeepers use, but I think the majority of goalkeepers in this tournament are going to be more focused on where their feet are, considering the decisions, than anything else. So I don't think anyone wants to walk away with a yellow card or have to have a retake again. So I think that's probably the main focus, yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully the US aren't listening to that, though.
Yes.
England face a daunting task then. This is the 8th Women's World Cup. The USA have won 3 of the previous 7. Molly, how much of an aura is there around America due to everything that they've achieved?
I think, as Jill Ellis said last night, it's not arrogance, because they deserve it. You know, they're the best team in the world. They've got the best players. They've got the best system for young kids growing up in America and wanting to play soccer. If you go to America and you're a young girl, it's just as acceptable as it is, if not more so acceptable, for a boy to play soccer.
Whereas over here, there is that stigma, and that massively translates into their team because, you know, you look at the likes of Megan Rapinoe, Tobin Heath, Alex Morgan, you know, they've just grown up in a way that this is totally acceptable. What they do is the dream. It's achievable. And you look at America and just all over the pitch, they're just absolutely world class. And I think, you know, us English laugh at this sort of American arrogance, but actually it's just the way they are. And I think if we were that good, we'd probably be the same. I think we're all slightly jealous of the sort of domination that America have had. And if England can sort of break that, it would just be the most amazing moment. I think, you know, we're all sort of here hoping, praying that England can sort of find a result. But deep in our hearts, I think we know that we are the underdogs, and that will be the case any US team that you ever face. You'll always be the underdog because they are just that good.
Well, the headlines at this World Cup over the last week have been dominated by someone you just mentioned there, Molly Megan Rapinoe, on and off the pitch. She scored all four of the USA's goals in the knockout stage. Before we get onto the issues off the field, Chloe, how influential is she on the field?
I think she's been incredible. I think she's such a presence and a complete leader. I think obviously just speaking about her performances on the pitch, and she's such a massive influence off the pitch as well. I think she's been at the forefront. I mean, they probably would be in this position anyway, but I think Rapinoe's definitely been integral to that, absolutely vital to where they are. I think she's strong with communication. She's clearly got the backing and the confidence of her entire team. But that's not to say the likes of Alex Morgan and Tobin Heath as well. You know, they're absolutely critical in the US's success. So, yeah, whilst Rapinoe on the pitch and off the pitch is an absolutely incredible role model, I think, yeah, that I couldn't detract from the other players that have been supporting her and feeding her those balls to put her in that position.
Of course, Rapinoe has caught the attention of many, including President Trump. Rapinoe said during an interview in no uncertain terms that she would not go to the White House if invited. Rebecca, she's certainly a remarkable figure.
She really is. I mean, you can't basically say that she doesn't stand up for what she believes in. She's been very vocal about not going to the White House. She was then sort of pressed to readdress it, I suppose, and reiterated that she wouldn't be going to the White House. Donald Trump's now said that he'll deliberately be inviting all of them, even if they don't win the World Cup. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch play out. But she's got previous on this. You know, she took the knee when everything was going on with Colin Kaepernick and in the NFL. She's very outspoken against kind of all forms of discrimination, obviously LGBT issues primarily, but also racism. There's an amazing piece during the rounds, which I would recommend anyone following this World Cup in any capacity reads on ESPN, about her brother, who has spent most of his adult life in prison and has kind of been involved and had problems with drugs his whole life, and has been involved in gangs and stuff, and about their relationship and how that has changed over the years and how she's sort of supported him. She really is far more than what you see on the pitch. And I think the women's game has this appetite at the moment for a figure like that. In the past, we've had sort of Marta, who we've spoken about before. But this World Cup, you know, what Rapinoe has done for this World Cup can't really be put into words at this stage, because I've been seeing people who, you know, never follow football tweeting like, I love Megan Rapinoe. I'm in love with Megan Rapinoe. I just want to like read everything about her and follow her closely. And I think you can't underestimate the power of a sort of icon like that during a tournament like this.
She is, as you say, an activist. She is gay. She's an advocate for numerous LGBT organisations. She suggested the other day, rather tongue-in-cheek perhaps, that you can't win the World Cup without gay players. Molly, what effect is Rapinoe and this publicity then having on the women's game?
I think in some parts of America, Rapinoe will always be controversial, but I think the media attention and what she brings, it's actually remarkable, because in the press conference after the US game the other night, somebody asked and they said, you know, how has this not affected Megan? And how has this not, you know, detracted from her performances both on and off the pitch? Because, you know, she's co-captain, she's been involved in a lot of media, she's been involved in a lot of press conferences. And what's actually amazing with Megan is that you speak to her and she's just so eloquent. She just puts her points across so well. And it's like, not only is she a footballer, but she's actually meant for this role as a spokesperson, as somebody to look up to, as a role model, not just about football, but about everything. And I think actually it's a testament to her, because she's had this massive media circus around her. And yet, you know, as you say, four goals. She's scored all of the goals in the knockout stages for the US. And that's just incredible, because for anybody else, and, you know, anybody in the England camp or anybody else in this World Cup, you'd think, how could she possibly continue to do what she's doing with all of this going on? But it genuinely does fuel her. It seems to make her even better that actually she sort of lives off what people say to her, and she's better for it. She seems to take it in but doesn't take it to heart. And I think that's an amazing personality trait that anyone can have, and it's just making her an even bigger star for this World Cup and literally globally.
Chloe, as you said a moment ago, it's not all about Rapinoe. So what is the key to stopping the US?
I think it's going to be very closely paying attention to the movements of Alex Morgan, Tobin Heath, Rapinoe again. I think they're going to be the key players there. They're going to need to be picked off. They're going to need to be man-marked in certain situations. And we're going to have to be strong and very tight. These players, you know, given the freedom, really, will run rings around defences and back lines. So I think, really, those are our biggest threats, and those need to be counteracted. I think the likes of our defence, Steph Housen put an incredible performance against Norway. It's going to be sometimes all hands on deck. There are going to be moments where they're going to be pressing so hard. But it's, again, our midfield kind of taking the pressure off there. But I think, really, we need to be quite heavily watching those players up front, and also taking our chances when we have them, because they might be very far and few between. So I think if we've got the chance, we need to be very clinical in front of goal. But we've seen that with the likes of the set-up plays, that Lucy Bronze was outstanding. So I think, really, they're going to be far and few between, but really we need to make sure that those count.
Mm. Well, Rapinoe and Alex Morgan are the joint top scorers in this tournament, along with England's Ellen White. 5 goals. So White has scored in all 4 of the games that she's played in at this World Cup. We mentioned the influence of Rapinoe there, Chloe, but obviously Ellen White's form suggests her influence is just as important.
Yeah, she's been outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Really kind of faultless performances, an absolute example to the rest of the team. Very solid, very confident at the moment, flying high on the performances that she's had so far. So I think she's going to be a massive key player for us. And her going head-to-head with the likes of Rapinoe, I think, is going to be incredible. And Jill Scott, again, as an aerial threat. You've got the likes of Nikita Paris with the youth and enthusiasm. Georgia Stanway might even get a run out as well. You know, you've got fresh legs there, you've got youth, you've got all the kind of passion and energy that comes with that, and the experience of Ellen White again. So I think it's going to be a massive, massive test. And, you know, like Rebecca and Molly were saying, we are always going to be a bit of an underdog, really. I think any team would be. But I think the USA have been tested, but I think this is going to be probably the best test. Basically, I think it's going to be one of the best games of the competition so far. Mm. I think France-USA was absolutely incredible, but I think this is going to really put them to the test. And I wouldn't by any means say that this is a guaranteed win for the US, because I know England and all the passion that's been going on back here and all the support is going to have fed into the team massively. And I think with Phil Neville sort of creating this family mentality with the team, they're all going to go out there and have each other's back. So it's going to be absolute crunch time. But a part of me is thinking, you know what, we might just have this.
Yeah, I love that optimism. That's what we want to hear. A record TV audience in Britain of 7 million watched England's win over Norway, and then 5 million saw France versus the USA. So, Rebecca, we should maybe expect a new record for this semi-final.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we've got every reason to expect there'll be another one. It's been ticking up for every single match. And it's hard to gauge, I suppose, out here in France. We don't get a huge sense of exactly what's going on back home, but just things I spotted, Sadiq Khan tweeted saying there was going to be a screening in Battersea Park, I think, and, you know, everyone kind of getting on board everywhere. Every time I kind of call home or speak to someone, they're like, oh yeah, obviously everyone's watching it. So I think this is the moment when people who would tune in just for some good football become people who get that sort of British fever that we have. You know, when Andy Murray gets far in Wimbledon, people who don't care about tennis tune in. It's getting to that level of sort of excitement from what I can see. I think this is going to be, once again, the most viewed ever UK women's football match. Bit of a mouthful.
But it is fantastic. Battersea Park. I think someone in this studio might be going there.
I am indeed.
I'd like to be going. I'm very jealous.
It should be a fantastic night, hopefully. We should also discuss the heat, though, in Lyon. It's been a sweltering weekend. I mean, it was hot over here, but I know it's been even hotter in France. Molly, what's the forecast for Tuesday night?
Well, it's hot, and more hot over here. I sort of can't remember any other weather than it being absolutely baking. It's just been that way for so long that you sort of forget what rain is. I think parts of France had rain yesterday, and it was like, wow, this still exists. But, you know, Phil has spoken a lot, in all seriousness, about, you know, they went to St George's Park in preparation to this, and they said, look, we know it's going to be hot, and they're fully prepared for that. You know, they
They did sauna training. They had their underarmors on, you know, when it was really hot in England as well. They've been fully prepared for this. And what I think we have to remember is, yes, America have got this amazing strength and depth and arguably the most athletic of all the footballers. You know, you're back their fitness in any conditions, in any scenario, you know, whether we go extra time, penalties, whatever it is, you'd back the Americans to be just as fresh as they were at the start. But, you know, England have changed a lot and their fitness has improved massively over this campaign, over, you know, since Phil has taken over. He's really focused on possession and that sort of thing. And I think that could play into our hands. The last thing you want to do is, when it's really, really warm, which it is to be chasing the ball. And I think what he always says is that the ball never gets tired. And that's what they have to remember. If they can keep hold of the ball, and I know that's a very hard thing to do against the US, but if they can do that, then they're sapping the energy out of the opposition. I mean, the one good thing is it's a 9 o'clock kickoff in France, French time, which does play into their hands slightly. It's not as awful as the sort of 3 o'clock we saw a couple of days ago that just looked unbearable and drinks breaks and it was just awful. But, you know, with it being 9 o'clock, it will be slightly cooler, but as me and Rebecca can vouch for, it doesn't really get any cooler at 9 o'clock, to be honest. It's still very, very warm.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, going into the final quarterfinal, all of the 11 previous knockout ties had been won by the team scoring the first goal. That trend was then bucked, though, by Sweden on Saturday, who came from behind to beat Germany 2-1 and book a semi-final date with the Netherlands on Wednesday. Chloe, was this the biggest shock of the tournament for you?
I think it was, probably. I think it'd definitely be up there, as well as Japan. I was obviously expecting that they might cause France some havoc in this side of the tournament. But no, I think that they've put in an absolute shift, really. I think the like of Blackstinius, I mean, she managed to infiltrate the defence in ways that I've not quite seen before. I mean, the pace, her positioning was absolutely fantastic. So she caused them some real damage. And I think, you know, Germany, I think, sometimes maybe looked slightly complacent in the way that they were. I think they were always expected to do very well in this tournament. But, you know, congratulations to Sweden, really. They're, you know, currently ranked 9th, so still in the top 10. But I think really they weren't really expected to get this far. And now they're you know, at least going to finish 4th. So, you know, they've come away from this competition, obviously, given it their absolute best shot. I don't know how they're going to fare up against Holland. They are looking particularly strong at the moment, but that'll be a really good game to watch. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I mean, everyone fancied Germany to reach the final. So, Molly, how did they let it slip away?
First, it was one of those games that was played, as we just discussed, in, like, middle of the day, like, really, really warm. I think out of all the games, that was probably one of the worst sort of conditions. And Germany, it was like they tried to press Sweden, and Sweden were just too good on the ball, and they sort of 10-15 minutes in, you suddenly thought, wow, it's this hot and we're not going to be able to press, we're not going to be able to do that. And I think that's what it is. A lot of it is about being sensible, about working out what your strengths and weaknesses are and really utilising them, particularly in this heat, because if you waste that energy, that becomes so crucial. And I think watching the game, it felt as though towards the end Germany probably got back into it, whether that was a bit of exhaustion from the Swedes, or whether it was just because Germany sort of realised they were going out, and that was so odd for a German team that they suddenly was like, right, wow, we need to get back on it. But so much was lost when they went behind. It just felt like all the momentum was with Sweden. And I mean, we played Sweden last year, I think it was, and you know, they beat England, and wow, like from then you knew they were a very, very good team. And I think that's what we can all say about this tournament, is that yes, Germany are Germany, and any tournament you expect them to do really well. But actually, the strength and depth is really here now, and you can't underestimate anyone. And Sweden proved that more than anybody else maybe in this tournament. That actually, they might be ninth, but they're ninth ranked in the world. But actually, they're a really, really good side, and you know, they'll pose lots of problems as they showed against Germany.
Well, Sweden were losing finalists in 2003, and I guess people really have focused their attention on the other side of the draw with the USA, France, and England there. Rebecca, who are the stars then that we should be looking out for in the Swedish team?
There's been some really great sort of standout players in the Swedish team, actually. I think certainly Sofia Jacobsen, my pronunciation there, probably not my best Swedish, but I just think she's fantastic. She played brilliantly in the match the other day. This beautiful goal, it was really, really kind of that kind of clear, calm kind of goal that you'll need in these kind of high-pressure matches. She's fantastic. She used to play for Chelsea, I think, for a year, and now she's with Montpellier. So she's in that kind of French setup where you've got a lot of investment and a lot of facilities. And I just think she's fantastic. And you've also got Nilla Fischer, who's 34 now. So she's kind of, I suppose, this will probably be her last World Cup. But she's an outstanding player, a real sort of senior figure in the team, and definitely one to keep an eye on. She's brilliant.
The Netherlands saw off Italy 2-0 on Saturday. They are the European champions, but had only won one World Cup match prior to this summer. So, Molly, how have the press in Holland received their performances so far?
I think it's been overwhelmingly positive. I think if you I remember speaking to Vivian Miedemar, and you know, she's an incredible player, and she was saying that almost the expectation back home is almost more than they ever expected. I mean, we talk about us breaking, you know, TV figures and everything, but these players are used to that sort of pressure from when they won the Euros in Holland. It's just the whole country fell in love with this team. And I think for a while, it felt as though that pressure was almost too much. And I remember Miedemar saying that it took them a while to get used to that sort of pressure and expectation. And I think the Netherlands were one of those teams where on paper, they looked very, very good. But going into the tournament, they were sort of like, will they get it together? Will they not? I think, again, Miedemar spoke about the fact that, you know, they haven't always spent that much time together as a national team. Obviously, they're all incredibly talented individually, but, you know, all of the nations only have that set time as a team. And I think they'd sort of struggled to make the most of that. It wasn't quite gelling. You know, you look at a front line of Lieke Martins, Vivian Miedemar and Shanice van der Sanden, you think, you know, that's got to be up there with the best in the tournament. But it's just about getting it together. And, you know, I think even the Netherlands probably haven't played the best football they can. They've probably got another gear, as you would say England have, US have, probably Sweden have as well. And I think actually they've done really well to grind out results, which isn't something that you'd necessarily associate with that team. But I think, you know, they'll get a massive reception back home. And for them, probably, you know, as much as the US are just incredible and the media attention around them is just a whole, as Megan Rapinoe said, circus in itself. I think, you know, probably the Netherlands are respected as much in their home country as any other nation because they've done so much for the game, and off the back of that Euro success, I think, you know, the whole country is literally behind them.
And Rebecca, I'm guessing the Orange Army are still following in big numbers.
Absolutely. I mean, they have been. And I actually, unfortunately, with the timings and the way it's worked out with the England games, I haven't been to a Netherlands match yet. So I'm so excited for this because I've been following, obviously, all these videos of them like marching down the street and these videos where they sort of all lean to the left and all lean to the right and there's sort of 5,000 or something. I just can't wait to see it. I think it's so rare in women's football still to see a fan base like that. It's incredibly special and powerful. And I think this is massive for them. I loved the Italian team. I thought they'd done an amazing thing for the women's game in their country. They had this incredible kind of gumption spirit and they were brilliant. But I also kind of secretly wanted the Netherlands to win because I thought, yeah, I want to be there and I want to see that fan base in action.
Chloe, I have to be diplomatic and ask, who would the USA or England prefer? But let's just say, who would England prefer to play in the final?
I'll go with England. I would say, I think the better battle to watch would definitely be Holland. I think the passion from both sides. Obviously, the Netherlands have come into this competition now, reaching the semi-finals for the first time. Like you said, they're European champions. They're looking very strong. And both England and the Netherlands would want the title more than anything in the world. I think it would mean the absolute world to them. So I do think it would be a better game to watch with Holland. I think it would be a slightly easier, dare I say, game against Sweden. But I think for viewing pleasure, I think it would be an absolute awesome one to watch England take out Holland and hopefully lift the cup. But obviously, we've got a bit of a battle between then and now. But that would be my call on it.
Goodness me, wouldn't that be exciting? Right, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Chloe Morgan, Rebecca Myers and Molly Hudson. Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. And we'll be back on Thursday when maybe, just maybe, England will be in the World Cup final.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.